Death and destruction is what happens.
Incoming transmission. Engage house party protocol. Mark 4 powering up. Mark 17 powering up. Mark 44 powering up. All suits are online. Welcome to house party protocol.
Power up suits and welcome into another episode of House Party Protocol. My name is Will, and with me today I have a good friend of mine who has been on before, but it's been a little bit, Andrew, or as some out there know him better, Flex. What's up, man?
Hey, man. Good to be back.
Glad to have you back. So tonight, one of the things that we're going to talk about is kind of the TTS League, where that is. And then today, it's going to be more of a strategy, tactics, kind of overall overview type episode. So strap in for that. We're going to talk about some of the newer stuff, some of the Black Order stuff, and just some general strategy tips out there. And yeah, I think it'll be a good ride. So saddle up. But before we get to that, there has been just the ever so slight bit of news came out of a stream this week. Dallas spoiled the Web Warriors card for who's in the Web Warriors. So we know that Miles is the leader. We know Spider-Man, Peter Parker, is in affiliation, as is Ghost Spider, Spider-Gwen. And also Venom is part of the Web Warriors. So do you have any thoughts on that real quick, Andrew, before we get too much further?
No, that's pretty cool. I actually hadn't seen that had been spoiled yet. So I'll have to take a look at the card, but that's pretty cool. Interesting that Venom's included, but it makes sense.
Exactly. He has been at times a lethal protector, so I guess that works. I never read the Web Warriors like comic line, but I'm sure that's the reason why, is because he was in that in some way or another. But I think it's everyone expected Miles, I think, to be the leader, and I think it makes sense a little bit. But I would have been okay with Gwen being the leader also, but I'm excited to see what this affiliation ability, what his leadership ability is going to be, because as we've talked about before on this show, Spider-Man is kind of meh in a lot of ways for me, and I wonder if the leadership ability unlocks him more, you know?
Yeah, I do. He's definitely a little underpowered, it feels like, so gotta hope that the leadership will give him a good boost.
Cool. So let's just jump right into it there, Andrew. And why don't you tell us kind of what's going on over in the Tabletop Simulator or TTS League?
Yeah, so we're finishing up week 5 of the league right now. And so the new characters, as they've been released in the United States, is when we've been allowed to sub them into our rosters. So I think it was like the first 3 weeks we played without the new characters, and then we had 2 weeks where we just had the new characters, the Proxima, Corvus, Black Dwarf, and that pack. And then this week, with the release of the new characters, we're going to be adding like Hawkeye and the new Black Widow and all of those characters. And we get sort of free substitutions on the weeks where the new characters come out.
That's
so
cool.
There's usually like a limit, like only one or two changes per week. But with the new characters, it's just you can make all the changes you need.
That's cool. And it sounds like that, I guess if you plan on doing that, since it's supposed to be like a locked roster type thing, that you better hope your theory crafting is on point with how they're going to work, right?
Yeah. So we've got week 6 coming up, but essentially the rosters that we're submitting right now, we're not going to allow changes for the tournament portion of the league. So basically it's like a round robin for the first 6 weeks, and it does seeding for a tournament that they're going to play through. And in the tournament, your roster locks for the whole thing, so there's no more changes. So since week 6 is the last week before you go into the tournaments, yeah, we're going to be potentially playing characters or submitting characters we haven't really played with before.
Nice. And so also it sounds like the people that have had these for a while, like the people overseas and stuff, I don't know if there's any overseas people that play on the TTS League. I would imagine that there are. But my guess is that they might have a little bit of a leg up since they've actually had these models for a while now.
Yes, there are a few international players. It's mostly United States. They've actually kind of broken it into divisions to help people match up because of time zones and scheduling.
Oh, that's cool.
So they've handled that pretty well. But yeah, there were a few of those. I had a casual game against one of those players. Just had him for a while, and he kicked my butt. He was like, I was like, oh, that's a very interesting way to use these new characters. It's like, yeah, I learned a good lesson. Nice. I think it was he used Black Dwarf to drop off MODOK.
What?
Which is very strange. He used my Rocket Boots combo or the Rocket Boots combo and just dropped off MODOK, and then MODOK had like three attacks on the opening turn and Black Dwarf was there, and then he used Proxima Corvus and used Mothership. It was some interesting stuff.
That sounds wild. I couldn't imagine dropping off MODOK. Like, what does that even look like? I don't even know.
I was pretty impressed when I saw it because I was expecting the Corvus Proxima drop off, and still when it was the MODOK one, I did not see that one coming.
That's awesome. And what's funny is I would not expect a Black Dwarf to drop off a MODOK for many reasons, but like he just moves short. It's not that far, but then I think the more I think about it, I'm like, but wait a second. He moves short, but that 65 mil base moving short and then being able to place MODOK even further up, and MODOK's attacks are range 4. I see it now. But it's like,
yeah,
that's so bonkers.
Exactly. So that's kind of a sample of some of the new things we've been seeing. But yeah, it's interesting to see new characters out in the wild.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I actually just today picked up my Black Dwarf, Ebony Maw, Corvus Glaive, and Proxima Midnight pack. Unfortunately, I still don't have Gamora and Nebula just yet, but hopefully soon. I've got a few local stores here, and my main one was using Alliance, and there's been a tiff between Alliance and Asmodee, and he's still getting his Asmodee thing set up, but maybe one day soon, hopefully, fingers crossed. But anyways, so you mentioned something just a second ago when you were talking about a combo, a specific, you said my Rocket Boots combo. So it's funny that you say that because I've seen this idea of Rocket Boots and drop off and just Rocket Boots being prevalent and showing up a lot. I've seen the idea of that a lot lately, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, but it seems like you are a bit of a pioneer in that space.
I may have been. I don't know if I can totally claim credit for that. I did kind of come up with the original thing, or my version of it anyway. But it's just a strong combo, and I just love using it. That's why I kind of refer to it that way. Because when you can use drop-off with a long-range movement template, you can just get so much range on the board. It can kind of really let you choose where the engagement's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's like strategically being able to force the fight where you want it to happen is, you know, a significant advantage.
Right. So if for those of you who don't know, or I don't know if you talked a little bit about it on the last time you were on, but maybe somebody hasn't heard that episode. Maybe we have new listeners. Real quick, what is the Rocket Boots combo? And I know you have a couple of versions of it, so whichever version you'd like to discuss.
So, yeah, like you said, it's sort of just a general combo. You can apply it to different characters to kind of give it some more range. Like if you're running Cabal, you can use the teleport from Red Skull to sort of increase the range a little bit. But the general gist of it is that you have a character with a long-range movement template, and then you've got somebody of the same size or lower, so you know that's why you're picking. In the past, it had been a Zemo and a Thor had been used for the combo because Thor was just the strongest, you know, size 2 character you can
drop. The strongest Avenger.
Zemo.
He's the strongest.
Yeah,
Avenger.
And then Zemo's giving him dice rolls and stuff. So, but the Proxima Corvus has been subbed into that for me for now, and so the same combo with the Rocket Boots and drop off applies. Essentially, just kind of activate Rocket Boots, make your first move, and that was something I kind of didn't figure out right away, and don't do the drop off with your first move. Sort of move up to the max of range 2 and then do your drop off with your second move. It doesn't seem like it's a lot, but like that extra range 2 of movement and the drop off is usually worth it. And then the second action of the character doing the drop off tends to not be as important as getting your target into range.
Right. And when you say the second move, you mean So moving at that maximum distance. So like when, if let's say Proxima is activating, so using your first movement action on her to get at that max range for the drop off, which I believe is range 2, right?
Yes.
So you get to that range 2, and then with your second action is when you move Proxima carrying Corvus or whoever out and then drop off Corvus for the subsequent murder.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's better to do that than to try and have them both. This is in reference to sort of a turn one move for me.
Right.
I had been just start on the starting line. I hadn't been using that first action to move up to get the extra range. And it did make a big difference when you get to certain objectives or in contesting those early secures.
Right.
But like I said, I've been using Zemo and Thor for that, but Proxima and Corvus, the linked activation is really strong on that. When you're using a drop off normally, your risk is that they can potentially kill the character that you dropped off before that character has a chance to activate.
Right.
And so when you're running Proxima Corvus and they've got the linked activation, you don't have that worry. So even if they were to counter and take out, you know, Corvus, he's at least got his attacks off.
Yeah, he had 3 attacks because the one from the drop-off plus 2 more.
Right. And he's rolling 5 dice with a Wild Pierce. So he'll be doing some pretty good damage. And then when he gets the Reality Gem, he's going to do really good damage.
And, yeah, if he gets the Reality Gem on him and that strike from the drop-off does what it's supposed to do, that's a death blow on his next attack, I think, right?
It very well might be. If it's not, it's going to be the third attack.
Right.
That he's going to be getting it. So exactly. He can just do a lot of damage. And that linked activation is nice because it reduces that risk. But it's actually more so for the priority manipulation. Because if you're playing like an aggressive team where you're trying to get a really early knockout, and that's what I like to try for a lot of times, is get a daze on the top of turn 1. You need to have priority at the top of turn 2 to be able to get the kill before they can react. Even if you got a character close, you still want to daze them before they can activate for the turn. Mm-hmm. It's obviously not as good, but you can still usually pull something off. But you need priority for that
right,
to work.
Yeah.
And so them being able to link and shift it when you bring the same number of characters is really good. And then even once you've regained priority, like usually if you kill a character on another team before they activate, you're going to give them priority for the next turn. But if they're linked, you can still keep priority even while you're killing characters that haven't activated yet.
And that's always strong. Always strong.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the I just think their play on priority is just very, very good for those aggressive teams.
Yeah. I think that priority is one of those things where if you're going for the kill, like if your list is predicated on killing, like a lot of Black Order lists, I think, are, and a lot of Cabal lists are, I think that having priority and maintaining priority becomes more important. But I also think that it can get you in trouble making, you know, trying to go for those linked activations if you don't plan it right. Because if you don't plan it right, then your opponent is going to also have 2 activations back to back that they could do the same thing back to you.
Right. At the end of the turn, you'll be out of activations and they'll have a couple to go.
Exactly. So
no, it can be a double-edged sword.
It can be, yeah. And I think it also depends on the crisis. Like on a 15-point crisis, so Gamma Shelters or Wakanda Nurb, something like that, I think it makes a lot more sense because there are already limited activations. But on these higher threat ones, for instance, the Panic Grips the City, so Citizens, as it's commonly referred to, or the Kree Corps, which is the alien ship crashes, those, I think, it's where it can be a trap a little bit. A little bit of, like, it's still good, still strong, but it can be a lot harder to time it right, I think.
But, yep, I can definitely see that.
So one of the things that you and I have talked about before is how certain things are pretty strong in the current meta, and one of those being BDT. We've talked about it before on the show, the big ding-dong Thor. And it's really strong because you brought it up earlier, getting Thor over to the other side of the board is, and getting him in there to activate, beat up people. And you were talking about with Thor doing the drop off combo, it's really good. But At the same time, he's vulnerable to the clapback, as it were, and he's still a hardy boy, but he's not invincible. So do you think that BDT is still as strong as it was? And do you also think, do you have a counter for it? That's a good question.
Yeah, so I still think it's pretty strong. It's one of the first things actually I look for on my roster, my opponent for the week. So usually get the matchup and you have a big spreadsheet that's got everyone's list for the week. So you can go look up what your opponent has on their league roster.
Oh, that's nice.
And like, that's the first thing I look for is like, okay, do they have BDT? And so like the fact that that's the first thing that I look for on an opponent's roster is going to tell you that like, it's still good. It's still relevant. Like, oh, yeah. I want to know if I'm going to potentially be playing against it. Because that affects some decisions.
Right.
So it is very strong. You kind of have to have, you have to know what you're doing or how to play around it. You have to have some sort of a strategy, whether you're going to play defensively and try to stay out of range of it, or you're going to rely on doing different kinds of pushes or something, stuff like that. Like, you kind of have to know that it's coming and have a plan. But if you do, you can work your way around it.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of what I've thought too. I played a sort of version of it in my last big time playing before all the COVID started. And like, I haven't played on TTS yet, but it seemed like it is vulnerable to the push. And I also think patience with BDT from, like, I've watched a few people play on TTS. I've seen some streams and talking to a few other people. It seems like if you're patient, then it kind of takes some of the wind out of the sails of the BDT.
Right. It's expecting to hit you hard first turn with Thor. And if you just, activate and move pass or activate pass and just like, don't do anything with your actions. And it feels so weird to activate a character and just not do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what you can do for your first couple of activations. And now all of a sudden they're expecting to gamma launch and get an attack right off the bat. And they can't, you're not in range. So then they're off their game a little bit and they say, okay, well, how do I advance and keep this together? And then it's not a first turn move anymore. And a lot of it, you know, starts to break down a little bit when you have to try and launch it on the second turn instead. And it doesn't give you as much of an advantage.
Right. So what is your kind of counter to that? So when you see it, when you see that that's in somebody's roster, what are you looking to do? Like, are you going into it assuming that they're going to play BDT and work from there? Or do you play your game and let them do what they're going to do?
It really depends on how the priority and the objectives roll goes out. I am only going to assume, like, BDT works in gamma shelters on 15 points at its best. And you can do variations of it on other objectives and other maps, but that's where it really shines. And so if I've got priority and I'm picking extract objectives and it's a 19-point extraction that I'm, you know, say I pick citizens and, you know, I'm not worried, okay, are they going to run BDT against my citizen, against the citizens play? Because it's just not as effective.
Right.
But if they get priority and then they pick blue, then I'm sitting here, I'm like, okay, they pick gamma shelters, they can pick 15, they've got the priority. Like, if they want to play that, then you just kind of, you know, have to be thinking about it. But obviously you'll see if they have picked it or not before you can pick out your roster. So you still have a chance to react.
Right. And I think that that's an interesting thing. What you just said is like, so if I'm in a tournament and I have like, I can already tell anyone that plays me ever, you don't have to worry about me running BDT because if you see Hulk in my roster, then you should be worried because that means I've clearly unlocked something that no one else saw before because I like Hulk, but I just don't see myself ever running him competitively. With that being said, I think it could be interesting kind of bait and switch as we get more models, as we get further releases and all this stuff. And it's just like, I think that as we get more releases, that list specifically is going to have seen its day and it'll be the next new thing. I think Black Order is going to be huge in the upcoming time frame, I guess. But anyways, I think you could use that as like a little bait and switch. So like, hey, I've got priority, I'm picking blue. Well, now all of a sudden I pick gamma shelters, but maybe I've got something different on play. you know, you make my opponent think that I'm going to be going for that BDT, but then boom, I've got something different here. I don't know. I think that could be a fun
little... Yeah, a little gamesmanship there.
Exactly. Yeah, I like that kind of stuff. That's fun for me. And one thing I think that this game desperately needs, I mean, desperately needs, like, I like the tournament setup and it's designed to be less pure competitive, but my God, alternating picks would be so good for when you're at a tournament and you're picking your teams, like pick versus counter pick. I would love to see that in this game. And I guess a tournament organizer could do that, but per the AMG specific rules, that's not a thing.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Drafting would be a lot of fun. When I first started playing, I kind of thought there would be drafting in the competitive play, but obviously there isn't. But yeah, it'd be really interesting to see. And then, like, you know, don't allow people to take the same players if you really wanted to be mean.
Oh man, that'd be nasty. That would make priority literally the most important thing in the game.
And you couldn't do it with only roster sizes of 10 characters because there'd be too much overlap, but it would be funny.
It would be funny.
I remember my wife came over, she was playing, I think I was playing one of our other friends, and she came in and she was like, wait, you can both have the same characters? I don't like that. Just like walked away. I was like, whatever.
Yeah, you know, so there's a multiverse. That's just explained to her. It's like, there's a multiverse, you know? Come on.
Exactly.
So what is your BDT counter list? Maybe this is a little inside baseball. Maybe people that play you on the TTS are going to learn something tonight, but, you know, fuck them.
Sure. So credit for this has to go to Captain Canada. He kind of walked me through how he came up with this, and it just came after me because it uses the rocket boots drop off combo.
Yeah.
So I was interesting. I was like, oh, I already have this exact, you know, counter on my roster, like my league roster. I had everything I needed to run his strategy, so it was pretty awesome. But essentially, the idea is that you want to get Thor and Hulk away from each other just so that they can't activate the gamma launch. And against Hulk, pushes are just so painful. Even if he's got, you know, his jump, it's still actions and power that he needs to take to get those short moves.
Oh yeah.
So it kind of centralizes around doing the drop off of Shuri. Mm-hmm. And so you wait for their activation, you know, Captain moves and then they have to activate either Thor or Hulk, and then you drop off, hit the one that hasn't activated, so push them farther away so they won't be able to kill Shuri, like get to her and kill her before she activates.
Mm-hmm.
And then you activate her and then you double tap the other one away. And now, like, Thor and Hulk are, you know, pushed to the back left and right and they're completely split across, and your gamma launch is like, oh, well, they're not in range to use it. And so you really disrupt that play, and then you can sort of fight in the middle. And Canada's, again, it was a Cabal list, so it's the stuff I was already running. He has Red Skull and MODOK in there, and so you've got MODOK to take out Captain with his psychic attack.
Oh, yeah.
So just, you know, you've got the terrain throws, and you can use the walk, the bow to the will, to make him move, so you can move him out of range of being able to bodyguard characters. So right. MODOK just is a really hard counter to Captain. And so once you kind of dissolved, you know, the initial onslaught with the pushes, then you can just clean up with MODOK and Red Skull.
Cleaning up. I like it. Now that sounds like a fun combo, and it's, yeah, I think Shuri is probably the answer. I know some people start salivating when they see Shuri over on the other side of the board because they think, oh yeah, I can get over there and take out Shuri. That's a easy kill for me. And I'm kind of like, is it though? I mean, I don't know.
She'll be at the top of my target list. Like when I will position my characters usually with the rocket boots drop off that they can hit sort of either side of the board. And so when I set them up, I see Shuri and then she goes up and takes a secure objective. Like she's usually target number one.
Oh yeah. No, if the opponent positions Shuri poorly, yeah, I would want to take her out immediately because like you said, that she's target number one. That those pushes and all that stuff and the upgrades are so strong.
Rerolls for days.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's all so good. But the way I play her, it's like, man, I'm going to hold her back. she's going to be low on the totem pole in terms of when to activate her and everything. And I want to make sure that I activate her late so she can do her best work. But
yep,
that's just
pushing
me.
Those people off objectives, stuff like that, where they can move back onto them.
Yeah, all that good stuff. But anyway, so yeah, I like that combo. I think that sounds really fun. And yeah, keeping Hulk away from Thor and them away from each other, I think is really good. I think Hulk is probably the weak link in that BDT list.
Yeah, because you're taking him just for the gamma launch. And that's also why I don't particularly like it, because you do get to, toss Thor across the board, but I'm not a huge fan of Hulk. And so, like you said, he's the weak link there, and that you said you're spending 6 points to do a throw up the middle, and then it's kind of, hope you can get something out of Hulk the rest of the match.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, I think Hulk is still a force, even if you don't focus him down. And if you're playing on gamma shelters, I mean, he can get to the middle one, turn two, do a thunderclap, maybe hit a few people, which is still good, but it's not as good as like the damaged up Hulk. And if you just kind of keep pushing him away, it really limits his utility. Like, he's still gonna be able to throw stuff, but if you run a counter Thor to that, like if it's Thor on Thor action, well then that opposing Hulk becomes a mobile piece of terrain that just can start kicking ass, for the opposing team.
Yeah, you always got to be real careful when you're putting a size 4 character on your list, because you're just handing your enemy team a battering ram.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I'm worried about with Black Dwarf. Like, I really like Black Dwarf, but I'm also worried that with the prevalence of Thor right now, that he's going to see a similar thing to Hulk, and he just becomes a battering ram, just a toy to be thrown.
So I am a fan of Black Dwarf. We'll see how he actually shapes up. I actually have an extension of the Corvus Proxima opening move. So if you do the drop off with them, I've actually followed that up with an R&D and then a mothership. So you can use the power generated to advanced R&D and get the one power from Corvus over to Black Dwarf. And then you can mothership in Black Dwarf.
So for those that don't know, Mothership is a Black Order specific card. So you have to be running Black Order. And it says two Black Order characters may both spend two power each to play this card. Place one of the two characters not holding an objective token within range one of the other character. And on that 65 mil base, that's huge.
Well, I mean, it's just you can activate it from anywhere on the board.
Exactly.
So it's you can send Proxima and Corvus up the board with their, opening turn assault. And then, again, you got to use the advanced R&D to get the second power over to Black Dwarf for him to be able to use the dropship.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the mothership, excuse me. But you do that, and he hasn't activated yet on the first turn when you pull him up. So, you're essentially getting Corvus and Black Dwarf with, their activations on the enemy line on the first turn or on an objective or something like that.
I gotcha.
So it's just, it was a fun little like, what happens if I bring my whole team in on the first turn?
Right. Yeah. Death and destruction is what happens. So here's a question for you, though. Can you run Mothership without having Thanos, because it is a Black Order specific card?
You can. So you can have an affiliation without having a leadership ability for it. So the fact that you can have Proxima, Corvus, and Black Dwarf gives you the three characters you need, or it gives you the majority Black Order. So you can have the affiliation without the leadership.
Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. I'm sure that other people out there might have thought the same thing I did there, and that it has to have the old leader, but I guess not. So that makes it good. That's good.
Yeah, that was there were some clarifying questions on the Discord channel to clear that up.
Good. Yeah, I will say AMG is pretty on the spot with the clarifications, which is weird, because I feel like this game's pretty simple from a rules perspective. It's pretty straightforward, but my God, there's been so many like, hey, what about this? What about that? What about this? That's just the nature of gaming, but it's just weird.
Yeah, you do run into those.
So What is your tactic card situation with your roster? Like, what tactic cards do you run? Other like, all right, we obviously know rocket boots drop off, but what else are you putting in there? And in what situations do you are you using specific ones?
So you only have 8 for your official roster, so you don't have a ton of options. As I was saying before, I have been using Advanced R&D and Mothership.
Yeah.
And you know, first turn, dropping in Black Dwarf and rolling from there. So if I want to run that combo, that's actually 4 of my tactics cards spoken for. So that's a pretty steep price to pull it off, but it gets them there. And then
do you think,
if I'm not...
Before you go much further, real quick, I want to say, do you think it's worth it spending 4 cards on turn 1?
I mean, it depends on what your goal is. And yeah, if like I say, if you're trying to get the group over there and take out, get 1 or 2 dazes on the first turn and then get 1 or 2 kills at the top of the second turn, you know, if you can pull that off, then, you know, if you've got, you know, 4 on 4 and it's basically 4 on 2.5 at the start of the second turn, yeah, I think it's worth it. Because you can have a bunch of tactics cards, but if, you know, it, the match has essentially become, like, say, a 19 on 15 threat match because one of your characters just got deleted, it's hard even with tactics cards.
Right. No, that makes sense. I see what you're saying there. I like it. Do you think...
You need to get one, though, is the risk that comes with it. And, you know, and most of the times, like, when you come up with these, you're getting enough attacks in there. You need to make sure if you do. So kind of you've got the BDT and then my strategy and what's coming up with all the new Black Order and stuff. There's going to be sort of a set of aggressive teams, like teams that are going to be coming at you first or second turn and trying to deal a lot of damage and kill you. I think that that's going to be, you know, a lot of teams, and so you're going to have to be able to recognize when an opponent's roster has that sort of a team makeup or possibility, and then you'll have to have a plan for how you're going to counter it. So, like, even if it, you know, it's potentially BDT, like I talked about, where you have, you know, a Shuri and pushes and stuff. So, okay, if it's that kind of an aggressive team, I'm going to use the pushes. But, you know, if somebody's coming at you fast with a Cabal or a Black Order lineup, and they're right in the middle of your team, like, you have to know how to respond or to be able to deal with those.
Yeah, I think you're right. So you were going to continue on with the rest of your tactics cards. But yeah, I think that that makes sense. Is you just kind of have to have some understanding of when you look at a roster, what to expect. You have to go into it understanding that the aggression could be there.
Yep, and I don't have anything special or noteworthy on the rest of my tactics cards. It's the usual brace for impact if I can ever fit. Now, that's usually the number one that goes in.
Right.
Med pack just came out, which is interesting. A lot of people have been taking patch up out and putting in med pack instead, which I think kind of makes sense. So it's 2 power, but it heals 3. So it gives you 1 extra heal over what patch up would, and a character can also use it on themselves.
Yep. That's, I mean,
so it's a more flexible.
I'm definitely in favor of dropping patch up in favor of med pack for that reason alone, is you can use it on yourself. Like, you can't net as much, obviously, but it's more efficient from a power perspective. Instead of 1 for 1, it's 2 for 1 in that sense, or 2 for 3. And the ability for a character to do it on themselves is so critical, because there were so many times it felt like with patch up, it's like, I just don't have enough movement to get over there to patch this character up. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, and just being able to heal yourself makes a huge difference.
It does.
So that one's definitely coming in, or has been added. I've seen that. You can run that and patch up if you want to have all kinds of heals.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That sounds wild.
But yeah, I don't have anything else too special on my tactics.
So it's funny for me, like with tactics cards, thinking about roster construction and all that stuff. I was a really big proponent of Recalibration Matrix early on, and I still like that card. I think thematically it's a fun card and everything, and if you have a crazy bad roll, it can help mitigate that crazy bad roll, but it also can help your opponent roll better too. And it's a card that I took out of my roster, and I put Advanced R&D in, which allows you to move power around, And I really like advanced R&D. I think it provides so much more flexibility. And also cards that don't have a range restriction that allow your team to do different things like this, like an Avengers Assemble, like Mothership. I love cards like that. And I think that that kind of thing is what's really going to see a lot of play. I mean, what do you think about that?
I also really like advanced R&D, but I like to have a plan for it so I know how I'm going to use it. It does give you a lot of flexibility, but I don't love using a tactics card for just saying, like, well, in the situation that I have a character that happens to need one more power, it's nice, but I think I find other uses for tactics cards.
Yeah, so for advanced R&D, I agree with you. I think you've got to have a plan for it, and it says that one character can spend up to 5 power, and then any number of allies can then, you know, get 1 power, basically. Like, you know, choose a number of allies equal to the power spent. So up to 5 power, and then 5 allies could potentially get 1 power. But do you see yourself saving up to spend it more often than not, or do you see it kind of like what you said earlier, like using a power that Corvus has and just giving it to one character just so they can do one thing? Like, what do you, like, obviously you use it for that second option, but do you think that you're being inefficient with it at that point, or is it just kind of situational?
I mean, that's situational. Another point I think where I use advanced R&D is in if you have Wakandan herbs and you want to do a similar move. So you can send Corvus and Proxima forward with the rocket boots and the drop off, and you can pick up the herb and get it back to your start line. You can basically get it like 2/3 of the way to your herb, and there's no interrupting activation.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting the herb 2/3 of the way home on turn 1, and they can't do anything to stop it. So like having a plan like that where you're saying, I need advanced R&D because I need to be able to drop off and pick up the herb.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing, like in those situations, or if you're trying to do the drop off play or the mothership play and bring in somebody, if you have a strategic objective that you need to do that switch to get the power over, the 1-for-1 I feel okay with. The other time, actually, I used to use it with Cabal, and I would have Red Skull first turn gain power and then dish it out to the rest of the team, and that would be really effective with a bunch of characters that would have charge.
Yeah.
So like Zemo,
yeah,
and yeah, Killmonger. So now all of a sudden they can first turn charge, which makes their effectiveness. Like that's a good another type of situation where you kind of have a plan, but you can send it out to more characters, and it's usually more effective that way.
Yeah, what you said it perfectly. Like I think a character like Red Skull can really be a battery for that kind of thing, and he's designed to be that way anyways. But then also a character that I think could play well with that card is Vision, because of his ability to gain that power as well. He has, I can't remember what it's called right now, Synthesis, I believe, and it allows him to gain 3 power. It's the same ability Red Skull has. And then subsequently he could push that around, which I think is a good combo. I think stuff like that's really good. Another card that
it's enemy gains 2 power, but it's actually not limited to once per turn, which is interesting. So he could he could use it twice and get 4 power from it.
There you go.
And he's actually a favorite. Like if you're trying to play a defensive style team, so like if you're trying to come up with, you know, how to deal with the BDT or that kind of thing, Vision was a favorite character on the stall team because he just takes a turn, gains 4 power. That was pretty effective still.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like Vision. I haven't played in a while, so that's kind of why I messed up on that ability there. But either way, I think that is an interesting combo and an interesting way to use the advanced R&D. And Vision's one that I know I've seen people talk about, oh yeah, if Vision's over there, we'll just do this attack and then force him to do the rapid phase and blah, blah, blah. And like, yeah, you want to force him to rapid phase, but I feel like that's maybe harder than some people might make it out to be. I don't know.
Yeah, Vision's not particularly easy to deal with. You know, when I see him on the board across from me, like he's a threat. Like I have to keep track of him, and you know, you don't want to get thrown and then beam attack and have him hit like 3 of your characters all at once, and you got to know where he is.
Yeah, I love his beam attack. I think Vision's ability to gain power and use that beam. I mean, if you like you said, you've got a position right, because that range three beam and what is it, five dice? I mean, that's potent. You're at least going to probably gain one power from that each time. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, no, I love it. I love Vision. I think his power generation is awesome. And his throw is so cheap.
Yeah, and the fact that he can throw the character and then beam you, it's like, oh, I don't have a good beam attack lined up. Throw and then beam.
Exactly. I mean, it just works. It's just strong. It's just a good combo, and I love it. And yep. Another card that I've seen kind of out and about lately is one that I never really gave much thought to, but upon kind of exploring it a little more, I can see its usefulness, is Tactical Analysis. I've seen that popping up here and there in people's discussions and whatnot, and that's the one where a character, the active character, may spend two power to play this card, choose another allied character within range three of the character playing this card. The chosen character may advance short. So it's a little bit less good version of Avengers Assemble, but I feel like allowing a character to advance short for two power, it's a mind gem, essentially, and it can get characters to score those objectives if they've been pushed off by Shuri, or to get them out of harm's way if they're in danger of being hit with a Thor or whatever.
Yeah, for me, I think the condition's just a little bit too steep. Like, being within three of that target character, that's not always easy to pull off.
Agree.
And so you have to be in the right spot to use it. The short move is, you know, really, or can be really great, except if it's in an herbs or if it's to get back onto a big objective. But yeah, it's too restrictive on the condition for me.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of it per se, but I feel like I could see its utility. Another card that I wonder if you've seen a lot lately in the TTS League is one that I liked a lot before, was Mission Objective. Would you say that that's still one that gets played pretty good?
I haven't really seen it. I think I did once in the last couple of matches, but it's not something I really see very often.
I gotcha. So what are the big crises that we see today? Like, is it gamma waves and citizens, or is it gamma waves and herbs? Like, what are the main crises that you think you're seeing that people are gravitating towards right now?
Well, the interesting thing that I've been seeing is that I feel like most people who win priority are picking the abstraction objective and then leaving the secure objective to the other player. So it's just, there's more options and there's a lot of different types of games that can be played off of the extraction. I always feel like this kind of the more variable, because aside from gamma shelters, you know, they're basically just secure points on the map, slightly, you know, moved around. So I feel like the evac objective really gives you the focus of the mission.
I gotcha. That's interesting, because I feel like whenever I'm in a match, I want to pick blue. I want to pick blue because I want to know where my static points are going to be. You know what I mean? Like, and my favorite is Origin Bombs. Like, that's the one I like to pick the most, because it's the one that I think requires the most effort on both parties, and that can really, really get out of hand if your opponent doesn't deal with it right. So, I mean, I don't know. What do you think of that?
Well, so the extraction objectives can, like I said, they drastically change. So if you're playing citizens and you can score the objectives for two, you know, that game's going to end on the third or fourth turn, probably, with somebody scoring a couple of citizens. And the secure objective, you know, you'll leave somebody in the back or you'll pick up one along the way. Yeah, it's not going to shift the length of the game too dramatically, in my opinion. It's mm-hmm. just going to. But if you go with like the alien ship crashes, where you need a crit hit on the search on the object to find it, you know, I've seen that game go to two or three turns before anybody can even find the thing and start scoring extract objectives.
Oh yeah, that. So I would not play that in a competitive environment.
Let's say, but that's exactly. So you got to be able to look at, okay, my opponent has an aggressive team and he's got, you know, his extract objectives, and then, you know, he's got Skrull Agent and the alien ship crashes, which are both the same thing where you need to find search the rubble piles and get the crit.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, so if he picks red, I'm playing that map. And you know that he's going for a kill team or to try and like just not worry about the extract objective is going to make the game take six turns and have time to kill you.
Right. Oh, see that. Now that's an interesting insight right there. Is I didn't think about it like that, of the opponent not bothering to even deal with that extract objective. See, because I'm over here thinking to myself, why would anyone ever want to take alien ship or Skrulls? Because they only score two victory points. They slow the game down so much. But you just unlocked that, I think.
Yeah, well, so that's what I did with my Season 1 roster in the Tabletop League, as I ran those two extract objectives, and I had the kill squad. So I was just going for board wipes, and I always picked one of those two extracts, and it just became really hard to get enough victory points to finish the game before you got killed.
Right, so what would you have seen as a counter to that? Like, would what a secure would have allowed the score to be allow you to score enough, like, because the extracts, they're only going to score, those are only going to score you 2 points per turn, but there's secures out there that can score pretty quick, especially gamma shelters. But
gamma shelters is going to get you the points the fastest, but it's also the hardest to pull that off.
Right.
You got to get to the other side of the board, and if your opponent is playing an aggressive team, you're going to say, smile and say, come to me, and, you know, kill you on your way over. So it's hard to get all the way down for that. I usually see either Infinity Formula or the Extremis consoles, and those are hard to get more than 2 points per turn. You have to make an aggressive move to basically take one of your opponent's control points.
Yeah.
So even if you get those, you're looking at two or three per turn. So that's what I said. The extract kind of can control how long the game lasts, and I don't feel that the secure objectives have that same ability.
That's really interesting, because I never really thought about it like that. I always figured that like I said, to me, the using those two as a slow the game to create a kill situation, because that's one of the things about this game that I feel like that is hard to do, is to have a kill list, to have a kill squad, because the dice can be so swingy.
Yes, and there's a couple ways you can get around dice being swingy. You can run like all the Wakandas, and I've seen like all the rerolls that come in, and with Shuri, and so basically you can try and reroll as many dice as possible, so you can reduce your variance that way just by doing a ton of rerolls. And the other way is that you can just throw so many dice that they're eventually going to spike.
Right.
And the latter tends to be my strategy for making the all-out attacks. And it's like, sometimes, it's not going to work and you might not get the kill that you're looking for. But if you pull off like an attack that's, you know, you're attacking four or five times with five or six dice, like, you just need one or two of those to spike. And like, that's probably going to happen if you're rolling that many dice.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, dice are gonna dice, and this game has some of the swingiest dice I've ever seen. I know Jacob from Xavier Protocols has what he calls Jarvis to kind of determine dice odds, but I don't think I've ever seen just like a pure average thing. It's either always too much or not enough.
Yeah, I mean, it's an opposed dice roll, so there's a lot of variability there, because it's not just one roll there. And then with the 8-sided die, and it's a custom die, it's just, they're all over the place.
All over the place, yeah. And you have famously hot dice when you roll 8-sided dice.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So for anyone, well, people obviously don't know us really, but you got me involved with X-Wing when we first met. We met playing X-Wing, and you told me, you warned me, right? The very first game we played at the Comic Cellar in Memphis, Tennessee, was, you said, I'm sorry in advance. I was like, why is that? Because I have really hot dice. I was like, well, everybody can sometimes have hot dice. No, no, no. I roll really good all the time in this game. And you were so right.
Yeah, I've been pretty lucky with that.
Oh, my God. Like, seriously, with X-Wing, I could never get over the hump. Like, I would have decent strategy, but my God, the dice would always let me down. And in this game, you started off a little cold at times, and I remember you lamenting that to me as like, oh, what are these dice? I don't understand what's happening. But I guess that that has swung wildly in the other direction, as it's wont to do.
It warmed up to me.
Yeah. Well, maybe one day I'll live the hot dice life, but I did for a little bit there in this game, and it was pretty good, but it's been struggle bus city for me lately.
Yeah, it happens.
But anyways, speaking of struggle bus, let's bring this one into the station. And any final thoughts, anything else that you think that the listeners, the suits out there, need to hear about tactics for Marvel Crisis Protocol?
No, I think we covered most of it.
I think we covered a lot of good stuff tonight. I think that this game has a lot of different tactical choices, and I think that each release brings with it new fun interactions that we as a community get to unlock. And as most of you know on this show, we like to do a lot of theory crafting. We like to talk about what we expect to happen versus, you know, and then the reality of that might be different. But I'm excited to get some games in soon. I'm hoping to be able to get some here one of these days. And one day, maybe at some point, I'll get on TTS. I don't even know, but who knows? Anyways,
maybe one day
you'll drag me kicking and screaming. You'll invite me over, and instead of actually playing the game, you'd be like, all right, let's get on TTS.
Put a laptop down in front of you instead.
Exactly.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I could see that happening. But anyways, thanks for listening, Suits. And as always, you can find us on Facebook at House Party Protocol Podcast. Feel free to leave us a message and interact with us over there. We really like talking to you guys. We're going to have a giveaway soon. I'm going to be posting about that very soon. Look for a Corvus Glaive Proxima giveaway very soon. And then also, once Thanos is released, we are going to be doing a Thanos-themed giveaway. So get ready for that. And also, go to blacksitestudio.com for some of the best gaming terrain around. It's pre-painted MDF terrain. They have great stuff over there. I have a ton of their kits. I love them. And you can use code HOUSEPARTY15 to get 15% off individual items. So they have bundles and they have individual items, and you would get 15% off the individual items over there. Really great stuff. Their Arclight Metro kit is one that I don't personally have, but that was designed with Marvel Crisis Protocol in mind. And it comes with a lot of interesting terrain features that you can use to throw around the board and stuff like that. So definitely check that out. Send us an email at housepartyprotocolpod@gmail.com. We like talking to you guys over there as well. And also, we've got some fun things on the horizon. And I think I mentioned this before, we're going to have some t-shirts and some koozies, all that good stuff coming out here at some point, just trying to let the pandemic calm down before we go doing all that stuff, just because, you know, times are tight right now. So we're trying to give everybody an opportunity to build their stash back up, as it were. And AMG just keeps releasing models in mass waves, so people got to buy their models. And also, let's see, I had something else, and now it's gone like a dream out of nowhere.
And it's gone.
So yeah, oh yeah, I remember. So the last thing is, we are going to be doing an after party. Me and Nate from the Gamers Guild are going to be doing an after party episode soon, and we're going to be talking about the first Wakandan pack that was released, Black Panther and Killmonger. So feel free to send us an email or message us on Facebook with your questions for that, because those are a couple of really exciting characters. I still love Black Panther. He is still one of my favorite Marvel Crisis Protocol characters, even after all these releases. And I know Nate still loves him some Killmonger. But yeah, so let us know what's up with that. And Andrew, party on.
Party on.
Peace.